understands a couple of administrative notes. You'll notice on your agenda that we have tried to shorten the meeting from the 2.5 hours to 2 hours. We, with that, we may be a little more abrupt or a little bit more adhering to time frames and discussions during discussions. So please understand we're not trying to cut you off because trying to cut you off. We're just trying to move things along. And we'll try to be a little more attentive toward that. You'll also notice we have a different arrangement in the room than usual. That was brought to our attention last meeting that several of us that were speaking, i.e. me and Kelly, Kelsey, I do that to her about half the time, and she's somewhat...
I've never been called my correct name. It's Kelly or Kelsey.
She hasn't hit me yet, so...
You should take that as a compliment.
So anyway, people in the, I'll call it the gallery or visitor area, couldn't hear us and could not, understand exactly what we were saying or see our facial expressions, if you will, sometimes. So we reconfigured the room. And then the third thing I'll bring up is to encourage everybody to please sign in. If you're on the board or a visitor or anything else, John Spence, we weren't going to carry you out, call you out directly, but... it would be great so that Megan can keep an accurate record of who's here. Dave Weston will not be here today, so our secretary's not here. Megan, how are we going to take notes?
She
can take notes? Okay. Yep. All right. With all that administrative mumbo jumbo, we'll call the meeting to order of the February meeting of the Clark County Parks Advisory Board. And I think what we'll do, do we have any public comment? I didn't see the board. We don't have anybody speaking today. Okay, that's fine. I recognize familiar faces, and I think we've asked several of them, do you want to speak? And they just say, no, we're here to visit and listen. So we'll leave that as is. So we'll go through a roll call. And
before we do that, may I ask?
Yes.
Since I was on the phone but not here and I don't sign that thing, am I considered having attended the meeting or?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Just check.
You were.
Okay.
And can I ask a question on that?
Sure.
Should it indicate in the minutes that he was attending via phone? Because when I was reading the minutes, I thought, well, he wasn't here. And then I realized that you're counting him because he was on the phone, but should it indicate that so that public or whatever?
Okay.
I think it's reasonable to do.
It just makes sense to me.
To note how you attended, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. So that it's not a question.
Makes sense.
All right, so we'll do that. So we'll start the roll call. Barbara, you want to start us off? Did I catch you just at the right time?
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. I had a 50-50 chance. I'm going to start with Kelly or you. So.
Barbara Anderson, app.
Go ahead, Megan.
Thank you. Megan Starks, Clark County Parks.
John Spencer, Pat.
Kale Pylon, Evergreen School District.
Bill Bierke, Parks.
Jay Chester, Pat.
Kelsey Potter, Pat.
I think we got Jennifer choking.
Jennifer Halleck, Vancouver School District. Sorry.
Sybil Crow, Park Foundation.
Kelly Putney, Pat.
All right.
Jeremy,
you hear
everything?
Yeah. Make sure
we got Ahmad in the back.
We do.
Ahmad, Clark County Public Works.
All right, and then Laura.
Jim Cotton, local rugby kid.
Laura Hogan, Clark County Parks.
And then Jim, do you want to? There you go. All right. We'll go to the meeting minutes and ask that they be revised as Sybil just requested. Showing Kelly's attendance, or manner of attendance, I guess, method of attendance.
Method.
Are there any other adjustments? Meeting minutes? All right, it's been moved. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right, been moved and seconded to accept the meeting minutes. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
As amended, yes. Thank you. Okay, and then the other item is the volunteer hours for PAB members. Please remind yourself. I have to do it each month too. Remind myself to write down your hours. There's two or three methods to do that. You go online, which I still haven't figured out how to do. And or you can get a form, and Megan's passing those out, and fill those out, and then return them to Megan, and she can get them over to
Karen.
I knew the well, but I didn't think Karen. I couldn't remember her first name. That's terrible. All right. So we'll go into the unfinished business. Park codes review and update.
Okay, so this is going to be fairly quick. The 12-step planner has been written. I do not have it submitted, so we don't have a date as of yet. So I should have that coming soon. So that's the one thing we need to do is set a date for the work session, and then we'll notify everybody of that date.
All right. Development and Engineering Advisory Board update. Kelsey, you want to try to do that? Or you want me to?
So I emailed you.
Yes,
falls
you
in your court.
Yes,
I emailed Jay a kind of summary of our recommendations with DEEB, the joint recommendations, PABS alone and DEEBs, to have Jay look over it before we shoot it over to Eric. So I'm waiting for Jay's blessing, and then I will shoot it to Eric, have him add what he wants to add, and then our goal is to take stuff from that document and make just a quick presentation for the ALPAB on kind of the product of the subcommittee we formed with them on working with the development community moving forward, especially for the next PROS plan. So that's kind of where we're at with it.
Yeah, I'll look at it and review it, and then Barbara,
I'll see you. Can you review it before it's presented?
Yes, I'll get it over to you. We'll get it over to you as part of the subcommittee. And then what we're trying to do is capture the information that we came to in our committee meetings, subcommittee meetings, as far as what we agree on, and then also what we don't agree on, or where we have some difference of opinion, not necessarily an agreement. And we'll just have those in the document. We'll let Eric look at it. Eric Guillermo and his committee are aware of the meeting, the ALPAB meeting. He's been invited. He said he probably will be there. You know, he's one of those guys that has lots of meetings, lots of things. We told him, or I told him, that we were going to present it. I don't mean this disrespectfully, whether he's there or not, where DEEB is there or not, because we will let him look at it, DEEB look at it also, before we publish it, if you will, for the PAB, all PAB meetings. So,
was it presented to him in a light that he could have input?
Yes.
Who was originally going to draft it, but right. When we kind of talked to him at the Responsible Growth Forum meeting, he just said he had a lot going on. So I basically wrote everything we had talked about. We wrote it step by step, and I just typed it, essentially. But I'm sending it, when I send it to him, it's going to be where he can edit it, the Google document. But I kind of want him to highlight what he's added so we can see what's being added and what's not.
And the document will serve two purposes. One is for the genesis of the ALPAB meeting presentation we make. And the other one is to document where we are as a subcommittee on both sides. For those of you that weren't there the last time we testified in front of the counselors regarding the trails PIF fee, Kelsey mentioned that we had a subcommittee meeting with the DEEB subcommittee, and all the counselors were, I got the impression, were, you know, very favorably responsive to that. And so I would like to make sure we have a document that between the two committees, DEEB and PAB, that we have an agreement on what we agree to and what we don't agree on, quite honestly, just so we've got it documented. And as Kelsey said, that way when we go into the PROS plan cycle, we have something to work from. We don't have to start over from square one and try to come to some kind of different agreement. So.
And we have something in writing to say your input. I mean, we, you know, you were a part of this process.
Both groups agreed to.
Yes.
So.
And touching on that, we should just say, because it kind of involves the development community, as we went to the RFG, we don't really have that on here, the Responsible Growth Forum meeting, and Bill gave a presentation for about an hour, and we got a lot, I mean, just positive feedback from the development community on how Parks is doing and all of our trail connections, and they seemed really happy with how Parks are going along. So I was a little nervous for that meeting. I didn't know what we were walking into, but it was a really receptive group who were, I mean, more in favor of parks and trails than I thought it would be.
I got the impression they were more in favor of what we're doing and how we're moving, that we're moving forward. Yes. That there is progress being made, there is discussions going on. They were not specifically honed in on PIF fees. They were looking at it in a holistic, the overall overview, and I felt that was very positive. So.
Yeah, we actually tested the waters a little bit and told them about where we're moving, you know, the discussions that Jay and Kelsey have had with the D members, Eric and company. We also talked about the possibility of consolidation of districts, you know, down, because there's actually an open docket item for this year for that. And then we actually spoke about the possibility of, to get off general fund, expanding the Metropolitan Park District to everywhere within the urban unincorporated, beyond urban unincorporated to the whole rural side of the county, so outside the cities. And so that's been brought up a few times now, both to the councilors and our new manager, and then we brought it up at this meeting. And so they didn't say anything.
I mean, they didn't have anything to say either way on it.
No.
Except that people don't like new taxes.
Right.
Which, that everyone knows that. So. But they didn't seem, I mean, there were some nods for it though too.
Yeah.
Like no one really spoke strongly one way or the other, but I mean, it's an interesting.
I think they're in favor of the direction we're going with the inclusion of trails into the park impact fee, mm-hmm. and then the consolidation of districts, and then what you've got been working on too, and see, taking a holistic look at how we operate the PIFs, you know, and then what we include in service levels, you know, whether it's, you know, the school properties and how we're going to put a percentage towards those. Looking at PIF credits, the issuance of PIF credits going forward as well. And so that's all kind of up in the air this year.
Okay. All right, well, that's kind of a good segue into our PIF edition of Trails update. And unfortunately, I wasn't at the meeting yesterday, or Tuesday. You want to take that, Bill?
So, yeah, that's coming up this next week.
Oh,
the PIF edition of Trails. So the hearing that was started on December 18th was continued to next Tuesday. And so we'll have a conclusion on that. And so what we have changed since the December 18th hearing was that we removed the Trails component from the calculation. So there is no calculation for Trails inclusion. It's just the language. So the code will show that trails are included as a recreational amenity. And right now we will have no mechanism for adding increased fees to include trails. But so that's kind of how it's going to go forward for right now. That's something we can readdress in the future. But
when we do the comprehensive update, is that when we do it?
Yes. Yep.
Can I circle back to our last bullet point real quick? And would that be something we want to add on the PAB recommendation side of our recommendation document with Deeb, is that PAB recommends the calculation of funding for trails in the PIF? Or is that something we just want to leave off this document for now? Because we know it's not a joint recommendation. We know the development community does not want that right now. They've made that quite clear. Is that something we feel strongly about, that we want to put on our side moving forward?
I think politically it would be smarter to leave that one off until we're ready to tackle it, because it just, you know, tends to color other topics.
Okay.
I mean, we all know our position and we feel strongly about the fact that it should be included. But I think John is right. The political atmosphere right now, having just been directed by the counselors not to have it, it would seem foolish to put it now.
Does that change the fact whether any of the funds can be used for trails? It just changes the calculation of how much is charged, right? But does it change whether the funds can be used for trails?
Yes, it does. So, any earnings going forward can be used for trails and parks acquisition and development. So all three will be included in that.
But there's not the additional funding mechanism. No more money's coming into the pot because we added trails.
And so we're not too far off, really, because although on our first take back in December 18th, we did have a calculation, but we were offering to not activate that calculation at this time. And so we still would have been not collecting any more going forward. So this is just, we're just subtracting that calculation out of the existing and moving forward that way. So looks like I think the councilors will probably give it a quick nod and we'll move forward.
Okay. All right, then we have the public benefit rating system update. We have some guest speakers. Bill finally doesn't have to talk.
Does everybody know Kevin Taylor?
He's our Lance manager.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
How are we all doing today?
Good.
Fantastic.
All answers good.
All right. Okay, so we came to you a few months ago about the public benefit rating system. And actually, it was the assessor's office that presented to you what it is and the process for developing this public benefit rating system has been moving along. And we wanted to come back to you to get some feedback on just the parks and recreation specific or parks and land specific components of the public benefit rating system as we've attempted to define them in advance of a March meeting where we want the assessor's office to come back and present to you the current status and attempt to answer some of the questions that you had at the time of the last meeting. So I thought I would start with just a refresher on what it is and what it isn't. So for those of you who are familiar with the county's tax assessment system, there's a couple of tax deferral programs that highlight or attempt to prioritize the preservation of open space, agriculture, and timberlands in the county. And this is a statewide program. So the county has traditionally used a current use program and a designated forest lands program. So the public benefit rating system doesn't have anything to do with the designated forest lands program. That will remain the same as it is today, and nothing will change about how we prioritize the preservation of forest lands in Clark County and in the state. Now we're talking about the current use program, and within the current use program, there are three categories. There's farm and agriculture, there's timberland, not to be confused with designated forest land, or to be confused with designated forest land, and then open space. So the public benefit rating system is only talking about open space and categories within open space where someone could apply and have this tax deferral on their property. So the farm and agriculture will remain the same, that's not changing. Current use timberland doesn't see a lot of use anymore because the regulations around designated forest land have changed and everybody's going that direction. So again, we're just talking about open space. Currently within county code, under open space, there are a handful of categories, including things like historic buildings or properties, soil conservation, stream, I think one of them was a stream category.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few, recreation areas is one of them, something like the motocross could be considered a recreation area if it wasn't members only kind of thing. So those are some of the categories. There's not a lot of flexibility within those categories, very tight criteria. And so the assessor's office came to council and said, we would like to evaluate this concept of the public benefits rating system, which has been adopted in several counties in the state, including King County, Spokane County, and I believe Cowlitz has even adopted it. So there's a handful in the state that have gone this direction. And what it does is it provides, essentially provides more flexibility within that open space category. Things like parks and recreation can have a priority, trail connections. It also provides a little more flexibility in the farm and agriculture conservation concept, where certain people that are in the farm and ag category of current use can't always meet the minimum economic requirements to stay in the program, so they get threatened of being kicked out. So one of the fallbacks is that open space. Sometimes they don't meet the criteria for some of the open space categories, so there would be possibility of a category in this one that's just called farm and agriculture conservation. And then one of the criteria would be that it could be returned to agriculture at some time in the future. But right now, for whatever reason, it doesn't meet the criteria to stay in the current use program. So the four areas that the county has been working, we put together a team of people that's a wide-ranging group, including county staff and external community members. The four categories that we're looking at are parks and recreation, farm conservation, historic preservation, and critical habitat. And so Pat and Laura and I have been working on the parks and recreation piece of that. And we've largely looked at what other people have done and that it's been successful and tried to model it in a similar way. Jeremy, could you go to the next slide? And I think you have this in your packets. It should be so you can actually read it. So it's a few pages in. And I'm sorry, we've also been looking at the farm conservation category. So those two categories seem to fall in line with the current structure of public works and parks and lands. So we have a half dozen or so parks and recreation specific categories, two farm conservation categories, and then there's a couple of bonus categories at the end that are about providing public access. So if you take the first one on the list, trail linkages, this would be, the idea is somebody who owns property in the county would allow public access along a trail on their property in order to get them to a regional trail or to another recreation facility of some form or fashion. So example, Salmon Creek Greenway. We have a nice trail system there. A lot of subdivisions up in the hills around it. Not always easy to get access to the trail in every location. You might have to go all the way to 36th Avenue to get onto the trail. We might have to go all the way to the softball fields. Maybe there's an opportunity somewhere to get people onto the trail from all the residential development. So promoting the idea of getting people on the trails. So if this were a category in the public benefit rating system, someone could apply for that tax deferral, and they might get 5 or 10 or 15 points. And if you get a certain number of points, then you get a certain calculation of reduced tax.
And in this situation, I suspect it'll apply to others. I've got this image of a trail going through a section of my farm that I formerly farmed.
Yeah.
And the trail is a total acreage of, you know, a quarter of an acre. But because it's there, I can't really use the surrounding 3 acres.
Right.
Is the whole 3 acres in it then?
You know, I don't know that all the details have been considered for situations like that. But that would be one. So I have a farm and, you know, my property is in for, maybe I have multiple categories now, right? So I have a trail linkage that I'm willing to allow the county to use. I have farm and ag that I'm going to conserve. And so then larger chunks of your property are eligible for the public benefit rating system. And it increases your score, so then theoretically you get a greater tax deferral.
Okay, that makes some sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there is some capability with this system to plug and play and have different combinations, different scenarios. Whereas under the current system, you meet soil conservation or you don't. You meet this one or you don't, right? So that's the general idea behind it.
Kevin, under the definition of trails, let's just say there's an area out in the county where the property owner is allowing horse traffic to go through the property, but not wanting pedestrians to go through the property.
Right.
Would we have to come up with a new definition of trail that divides the different uses up, and would that be an acceptable way to deal with some of our issues?
I think it would, because if you flip to the second page, we've started to define public access and how they would qualify for the program if they apply different forms of public access. So the highest priority for the county might be that there's no restrictions on public access. Any person can come through this trail easement, whether they're riding a bike or on a horse or on their feet, right? No motorized, probably, with the limitation, but you know.
So that might be a good way we can move forward with some of the push of equestrian trails
that
we've had a problem with.
So that could be one category that we say is a benefit, and you would give it a certain score. Mm-hmm. We have public access here listed as a bonus category. So you'd have to have another category in order for it to qualify. So you might have a trail linkage where you get 10 or 15 points. And then how you define the public access would then get you 3 or 5 more points.
There's 5 more.
Like that.
I apologize, I had to step out for you.
No problem.
But wasn't the current effort to also define these different land uses and come to and my impression was, or my hope was, that they would come back to us and say, these are the land uses that we've found or are going to designate, and what's your thoughts on that?
Yes.
Is that still the
plan? That is still the plan. And so today I'm just talking about parks and recreation farm conservation specific uses. The plan is to come back to you in March, assuming that we have more things. The assessor's office has more of it defined.
Sure.
But at that time, they would also present the historic properties and fish and wildlife type uses. Right.
What about education?
You know, I don't know that education is a component of it. At least I haven't seen that.
Within our, the Evergreen Arboretum, the Jane Weber Evergreen Arboretum, we are exempt from taxes based on education.
They're actually your second to the last one.
I was thinking that the public access, we did have one that where a landowner enters into an agreement with a school or nonprofit organization for environmental education.
Right, so educational component.
Yeah, so there is one.
That's a really big plus in my mind.
Yeah. So that would be some additional points. It's a bonus category.
Okay.
Public access and environmental education. And then we're looking at a couple of different things. Trail linkages, so that the idea of getting people to an amenity, whether it's an existing trail or a parks and recreation facility. We have trail easements, and that would be the idea of where we have a regional trail system planned and we need connections between, you know, say Chalachi Rail Trail is one of them, right? A property owner would allow us to build a section of trail on their property.
And so one of the criteria would be that it's in our trails master plan.
Yes. And another one, another way to differentiate those two is that we've talked about the idea of the landowner building and maintaining the trail versus the county building and maintaining the trail. So if the landowner were to build and maintain the trail, then they would get a greater tax deferral through the system. We've also looked at recreation areas, and you know, this would be the idea of something that's open to the general public to come and use. A couple of things that Bill pointed out are like H.B. Fuller and All Saints Episcopal Church, but if something like the motocross were to allow people to come out there and say use a trail network anytime aside from when obviously a motocross is happening, then that might be a way to get into the system, depending on how we define it.
I have a question about that. So let's say something horrible happens while the motocross is open.
Right.
Who's
liable?
Yeah, who is liable in these shared responsibilities? You know?
We would probably establish recreational immunity to anybody who gives us, or we have an agreement with them on this.
Okay.
So, yeah, if it's at a motocross and there's a trail going through there, if they get hurt, they have recreational immunity because they have the agreement through us, or through the county. And another thing to keep in mind is that this program applies to the entire county, including cities. So when we're looking at this program, you know, we're talking about Evergreen Highway, Wilson Park Trail, all that stuff. So it's pretty holistic there.
Okay.
Kevin, you just real quick, you used the word deferral, tax deferral.
Yes.
It's not a tax is relief or what?
It's not tax relief. So the way that these programs work is you enter into the program and you get a certain percent of your tax reduced. That tax burden is then shifted to every other person in the tax district. Mm-hmm. And then when you pull yourself out of the program, you pay back taxes based on a calculation that's defined in state law. And so, you know, I don't remember what that is off the top of my head, but it's something like 7 years of back taxes.
Wow.
So they can.
Yeah.
So they've allowed access during those 7 years, and they're getting a reduction in their tax they have to pay during that period.
Correct.
But should they take back that access in the future, then they have to pay back for the last X number of years.
Correct.
That is an enticement for them to continue on as a program?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And some of these categories,
it would be triggered at a sale of ownership or transfer of ownership, I would think. So.
Right. A lot of times we'll see people in farm and ag or timberland that come out to develop the property, and so they have to pay those back taxes. So when you're entering into this tax deferral program, it's for the long term. It doesn't make financial sense to do it for a shorter period of time than, say, 10 years or more.
For sure.
And there's a couple of categories where we talk about easements that are in perpetuity. So you get a greater benefit, a greater tax benefit, if you have that easement with the county.
But the county itself wouldn't have any. I mean, what makes me nervous is, let's say the county, someone gives us an easement for a trail access. We spend our money on this connection. 10 years later, they say, "I'm sorry, we don't want to be a part of this program anymore."
Right.
So how do we protect ourselves in that situation?
We would develop an agreement with the owner and not do that until we had a better.
Yes.
We can go above and beyond.
Yeah.
Like we can restrict them from the 7 years,
essentially,
is what you're saying.
Okay. Right. So the two categories where we talk about trail linkages, that is something where if the property owner were to just provide, say, a soft path through their property to the regional trail system, great. If it were to go away in the future, it would be a bummer, but it wouldn't be a huge financial burden on the county. But a whole segment of regional trail, that would need to be in an easement, or I don't think that we would be interested necessarily.
Right.
So we wouldn't want that section to go away.
Right.
Yeah. So Kevin, the one thing I wasn't familiar with was the tax deferral. And so, thinking in my mind, so if we are granting some folks these tax breaks and the rest of the taxing district has to make up that difference, So the county's already being made whole, right?
Right.
And so they still have to pay back deferred taxes when they go to sell.
Yeah, to be as count as the other person.
That is something that that has come up in hearings with the council when we go through the current use process. And no, there's no refund back to property owners that have had that shift of taxes put on them for 7 or 10 or 15 or 20 years. It's the idea, I think, from the state level is to prioritize the conservation of farm and agriculture, forest and open space lands. It's in state law that way.
I think you can make a fairly decent argument that that shift to the other taxpayers, essentially they're paying for that benefit. You know, all the taxpayers now have access to this trail,
right,
they're paying for it.
Right.
Without the opportunity to vote no.
Yes.
That's right.
Do you want to do your school levy fund right now? We'll do it at the round table.
So the other categories that you'll see listed there are, like I said, the parks and recreation area. So somebody provides public access to what would normally be more of a private recreation area. Farm and agriculture conservation. And this is for those properties that can't meet the agricultural requirements of the normal current use agriculture. Soil conservation is one that already exists, and we think that that's good to maintain. Again, prioritizing properties that are suitable for agriculture. Open space conservation. This is one that we're using as a bonus category. And that's because the fish and wildlife conservation areas that have been identified by community development as a priority are largely what the conservation areas acquisition plan is based on. So if you qualify for that, then you would get an open space bonus if you meet certain criteria. And then there's the public access granted categories.
Back to that open space one, it's those areas categorized as being a priority.
Yes.
Is that, I always go back to my own stuff. So I've got land along the Little Washougal that right now it's blackberry and pretty cruddy. Would there be an opportunity for me to upgrade my land so that it becomes of value, and then go into, in other words, you know, remediate stream bank and
that. Right. So my understanding of how it's defined for the fish and wildlife categories, and this would probably be good for us to cover in that March meeting, but my understanding is that if you fall within, so Little Washougal is a shoreline of the state. So if you fall within that, the property that falls within the shoreline portion of...
Is already going to be...
Yeah, that's an area that would qualify.
Right.
For this program. And I believe that they have some bonus categories created where if you did something like environmental restoration, if you did some stream restoration, then that would kick you up a notch, and you'd have additional
kind of what
credit.
What I was looking for is it's one thing to have, you know, a crummy chunk of land. It's another if the property owner actually does something good.
Right. Yeah. Right. So that's trying to create those benefits where people could get a higher score if they do good things, like that situation. Cool. Yeah.
Kevin, in the case of these little parks that are being built, they're not even parks, they're just...
Like pocket parks?
Pocket parks, they're playgrounds for owned by the neighborhood associations or whatever they have, the association group. Would those be eligible? And if so, why would they? Because they're not open to the general public?
Right. I don't believe that they would be eligible because when you go through that subdivision process and you create these little pocket parks and open spaces, that becomes land that's not taxable. It doesn't have a value.
Oh, they don't
tax
it.
So they don't tax it. Because The homeowners association is not paying taxes.
You mentioned that you guys pay a tax on your...
We did. We had to go back and reclassify the land.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
you don't now.
Because we have, I think there were like 21 little strips of land, mm-hmm. like the place that's got our sign on it,
yeah.
is owned by the HOA, and it was taxed.
Yeah. But it is
crazy, but a little tiny chunk of land and the tax on it was like, you know, it was only like 100, yeah. 200 bucks for each one, but it was substantial when you added them all up. And our park was included in that, but they are now all zero-based.
Okay, well, that answers the question.
Yeah, but we had to request that reclassification.
Right.
Interesting.
So I guess what we're looking for is for you to take a really hard look at this between now and when we come back in March to see what your thoughts are about the parks and recreation specific components. Do we need more flexibility? Do we need less flexibility? And then looking at the criteria as well, if you see holes in the criteria that we're missing, good ideas for us to consider. The further along we go with this, the more we need to make sure that this is very well defined. Some of those same questions that you asked last time about, well, what does this mean for a property owner when they're currently enrolled in current use open space? Are they going to get kicked out? Are they going to have to go into this? What's going to happen? They have not developed anything to answer those questions. Assessor's office has also not started to look at on a taxing district level, what something like this would do to the taxing district. All good questions that we need to answer as a group moving forward.
Do you know if King County, for example, when they instituted it, how popular it was, whether it was widely used?
I don't. I believe it's pretty popular and fairly well used. They have a very robust program. And that's who we've primarily used to model ours after. But that's a good question and something that we can ask.
When you look at the full county and you take every square inch of the county and you're either taxing it or you're not,
right.
Is there a standard or something of how much or how little of this whole county should be exempt from taxes?
I don't know. That's a very good question.
I mean, yes.
I don't know if it's a...
If we get this done and you suddenly find that us guys are having to pay our taxes still are going to have to burden for 30% of all the county because it's
right.
been...
Everything else has been locked up in this program. Yeah.
I'd like to know the bigger picture just so we know what we can expect.
I think those are all big picture questions that we've been pushing on the assessor's office to help answer. They're the expert in taxes in the county and how these shifts work, and I think that's okay. Those are really good questions to pose to them.
And I think they were posed, some of them were posed when they first brought this to us.
Yeah.
And their focus was going to be on definitions, defining more of the small steps before they looked at the bigger steps and the overall program. So. This is not going to be implemented quickly.
No.
I mean, this is a year-long study.
This is not necessarily going to be implemented.
Yeah.
Right? So
True.
This is a feasibility analysis
right.
where the assessor's office will come back to council and present, I'm assuming, in a work session in the near future, mm-hmm. relatively near future. And then we will get some direction from council.
But the end result of what you're doing will be immensely helpful to us in the comprehensive planning in 2020.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So this is very timely, you know, by having it done now.
Yeah.
Let's give other definitions.
Yeah. So the other thing I would point out is on this table, sort of midway through, is a narrow column that says suggested point value or importance rating. And we've taken a stab at rating those for priority level, high, medium, or low. And then on the far right-hand side, we've given you the King County equivalent and what the point system that they use. So if you have any thoughts there where we've just completely missed the mark, no, that's not a high priority for us, that's an actual a low priority, please let us know.
Can we change it to a 10-point scale? Because I definitely...
Yeah, that's medium high, really.
Yeah, well, actually, that's the way my mind thinks, so... Yeah.
And that's fine if you want to give us that feedback, because when we get to the allocation of points, because I think that's the direction this is going, yeah. You allocate points, and then depending on how high your score is, that defines what percentage of tax benefit you actually get. So, yeah, if you think something is really high, let us know, because then we can give it a higher point score. And then it'll all shake out when we start looking at the analysis of properties and what it does. Yeah?
Just a question about how somebody, if a piece of property is already getting a tax discount referral as a resource land, as forest land, timberland, or agricultural land,
yeah.
Is this an overlay on top of that to say, okay, because you're also going to provide recreational access, you can get a further reduction?
You know, I don't know that that's the case. In order to qualify for the public benefit rating system, it would have to meet a certain threshold. And if it's already in the system for timberland, I don't know, it would have to have a couple of other categories to make it worthwhile to enter the program. But with timberland, you're already getting
that, though, because just because you have timberland doesn't mean it's open to the public for access.
Right.
But if he makes a good point.
Yeah.
If there's several things that are benefiting.
I think that's a policy question that the assessor's office and council will have to decide. If a property's in for timberland and it already gets the equivalent of close to an 80% tax benefit, are they going to allow the mixing of programs? So essentially you could have zero tax in that situation, or really close to zero tax. I don't know the answer to that question, but
next month.
No. Yeah.
Maybe,
maybe we can find some of the other programs to where if it's classified as timberland, it's open access.
I don't know.
You gotta find a way to encourage them to open it.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And let's face it, if they're gonna get that, then why would they do that?
Right. That all can fall in the definition.
Yeah.
I think that's the one of the keys is the definition, yeah. And whether it's going to be an overlay program or does it replace overlay policy.
I think the idea is that this program replaces current use open space, but the other programs stay the same.
So moving forward, our responsibility is to rank these how we feel most important, essentially.
Yeah, most
in
important.
Their point scale. Are we going to... Does the assessor's office want us to vote if we even think this is a good idea for parks and open space? I mean, it feels like those things go hand in hand to me, that we're do this here, but we're not even saying that we think this is in the best interest of parks and open space. I don't even know if we've had that discussion.
Right. I think it would be good for you to have that discussion.
Okay.
And then to make a recommendation.
But I think we were waiting to have more information.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it has to be fleshed out more before we can... In my mind, before we can...
Well, didn't this actually come from our request to them?
No, this was started by Peter. Mm-hmm. This was all started at Peter's...
To me, there was a lot back. We're looking for a way to...
Well,
to
we can do agreements like this one-on-one with property owners.
Well, I see it as a major tool for us as we move forward.
I totally don't see
it. I agree wholeheartedly.
Especially in the trails interface.
If it goes to fruition and it becomes a policy, yeah, that helps us quite a bit with the PROS plan, and in my mind, and several others. So, yeah.
We'll see. I don't know. Maybe it's the political science major in me saying this is a very hard thing to get...
Absolutely.
The county to bite onto.
Oh, I'm not saying that the county is going to go with this, but...
And, like I just asked Kevin, we can do this one-on-one with property owners right now. There's nothing preventing us from doing this currently.
No.
This is creating a more expansive program.
Well,
that
except
provides.
The other taxpayers don't pay for the land, so it's just a reduction.
Yeah, it's just a deferral or a reduction.
It's a reduction program, right? Instead of a deferral program. To
correct.
So the county's losing money if Bill makes a deal.
But it's built off of the ag exemption.
That's right.
You know, the ag exemption program where that is a deferral. I think it's if you take your land out of ag,
yeah.
Then it's like a last 3 years you have to come up with the taxes.
They all work pretty similarly. Right. Yeah, there's a calculation for that back taxes.
No, it's a challenge for the developers. If you really want to go develop this property, here's your cost.
I just am not sure who. I just want to have a more robust conversation about the merits of the program as a whole before we go and rank it. Personally,
well,
I just
but
feel,
we need to know what.
Correct.
The
I want
is,
to.
So,
yes, exactly. Yeah. But at the same time, I just don't want to say, "Well, here's the ranking and bye bye."
It might not be a bad idea to reach out to King County to their parks professionals and ask them what benefit they've received since they've been.
That's a great
idea.
Really
yeah.
So that would be a good move going forward.
And possibly, you know, for a comfort level, we might look at doing a work session just for that topic.
Yeah, because I do
because
feel
it doesn't
like...
really fit within our two-hour time parameter here to have a good discussion that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think you're going to get a lot of people saying this benefits people who own lots of property, people who have more money. And then that tax burden is going to be shifted to people who don't have as much money.
Right.
And I think that's like on a... I just think that's something we need to flesh out more before we go, yeah, hi, you know, low. Anyways, that's just my 2 cents. And I do agree, like, we still need more info from the assessor's office and what this actually looks like before we make that decision. But that's just my 2 cents on it. So.
No problem.
Three cents.
We'll wait an hour or an hour and a half to discuss that in the next couple of weeks so that we don't inhibit any progress on
well,
this?
I don't know that we know enough information to have a work session internally yet.
I'd like to honestly. Hear from the assessor's office next month and then see if I, you know, if people still feel like there's a lot of gaps in our knowledge on it and then maybe go from there. But they might be able to fill in a lot of blanks.
I think we have more questions than answers right at the moment.
I guess just in my mind,
I don't think we're going to hold.
I'm concerned that we get a comfort level, number one.
Sure. No.
And number two, that we not inhibit any progress.
I think this is such a slow-moving train that we're
well,
not going to
exactly.
be the people who are holding it up, personally view. No.
I don't think they plan to wrap this up until at least the end of the year.
Something like that.
So I don't think there's any big rush. You know,
okay.
So I think they want this to be properly vetted.
Exactly. But with our support.
I think they're hoping for your support, yes.
Yeah.
We took your questions and concerns to the assessor's office that are meeting, and we'll do the same thing with your responses today. We'll present some of those again.
Yeah.
As a result of taking those questions, though, they're putting together some other documents where they realize maybe the message that they're giving out, they're not really saying about, haven't been talking about what's not changing. And everybody was very fearful of, you know, already being in some programs and having that taken away from family farms and some other situations. So they realize they need to do a better job in their summary of saying what it is, what's changing, what's not changing, and then just lay out. We also asked them if they would maybe be able to work on some calculations so that you might have some ideas of if the tax burden is dispersed, what that could possibly look like.
Yeah.
They're working on that, and they said they'd reach out to King County. I don't know if they'll be able to present that to you in March, but they are looking at that.
I don't see the March meeting as the last time we'll have this discussion.
No, it's next schedule. I think partly because this is a feasibility analysis.
Right.
They would like to have some of these categories relatively fleshed out in order to start looking at some scenarios.
Sure.
So taking some example properties, applying these different categories, and looking at what the tax benefit would be, and then applying that on a whole tax district basis, and how that would affect.
I think that'd be fine.
But I think going back to what Kelsey said, and this is a big animal to to implement at the county, and they definitely have their work cut out for them. So the questions that you guys are asking are things that people are going to ask them, and they need to be ready to answer. So we will definitely bring that information back to the assessor's office.
Can I just say how cool this discussion is, though? I mean, the little policy analyst in me is singing right now. This is just good, solid.
I agree. No,
oh, yes, that's great. No.
It's nice to have some disagreement sometimes on our board.
It is.
I think it's
that's
helpful.
When you know you're
even though I'm usually the only one who's disagreeing, but I'll wear that.
You're just bringing up a different point of view.
Bringing up, yeah.
We always end with a better product.
Yeah, that's true. That's exactly right. Megan, will you make a note, please, that we need to reach out to we'll reach out to the King County Parks and see what their benefit is. See if they're seeing a benefit from this program, and if so, what it is, or if they're not seeing a benefit. What is that also?
And what's some examples of this program look like in real life?
Kevin, where else? You can say Pierce County or?
It was like 17 counties.
There's quite a few counties, The counties that we've been looking at specifically are King, Spokane, Cowlitz. And was there one more, Pat? Was it Pierce? Or Snohomish?
Snohomish and Pierce would be...
Is one of those counties more like Clark County, some urbanization, city incorporated, but yet some rural area more than anybody else?
Spokane's kind of like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe we'll reach out to Spokane.
So I think the counties collect the taxes on behalf of the cities.
Yeah.
So we just reach out to the counties and ask them what's going on there.
All right. We've got time.
I think I'll be back
to cut you off.
I'll be back up for something else.
Okay. All right. That'll be fine. All PAB meeting, invite placeholder went out. As discussed earlier, we're working on the curriculum, if you will, or the presentation. Now I will start working with Megan and start fine-tuning the details of the meeting. Right now, roughly the agenda or the time frame is 5 to 6. We're having an open hour, session time that you can come in, visit, talk through. We'll have some light hors d'oeuvres and drinks out. Start the presentation about 6 o'clock or thereabouts. Go for 20, 30 minutes with that. And then let everyone in the PABs present their own projects, go around table for the rest of the time period, and basically a window of 5 to 8, but I don't think it'll run quite that long. But
I think Camus said they're not able to make that one, that third PAB has a conflict.
I haven't heard that, but I don't know, Megan, if you've gotten reservations. But
I don't know. Maybe it was just individual, not the whole thing.
Okay.
Not sure that should kill it. I mean, you can never get everybody.
Jay, what day was that again?
It would be, that's a great question, the 27th?
27th
of February.
Of February, yes. I should have known that.
Okay.
All right, and it'll be here in this room. All right, Kelsey, you want to talk about the PAB survey results?
Sure.
Or not?
It pretty much was an exact draw between change the date, don't change the date. So that doesn't give me any confidence in moving it at this point. Jay and I sort of talked about just kind of keeping an eye on attendance levels, and if a couple people come and say, something's changed, this absolutely isn't working, then maybe starting the discussion again about moving the date. We did talk about trying to condense the time down a little bit, which is why we are shooting for an hour now, or 2 hours instead of 2.5 hours, taking out some repetitive things like the PIF. You'll notice it's included in your packet, but we're not going to talk about it every month, that sort of thing. just in the, you know, everyone's busy, and our meetings were sort of, they were consistently going like 2 hours and 45 minutes. So we're just trying to make agendas that are a little more streamlined, things that aren't super important, moving them to the next month so we can have longer discussions about them and not feel as rushed through things. So that's the only sort of change that's going to be happening now, is just hopefully meetings that are at 2 hours and not 2.5, 3. So that is all, because changing things is very hard, as we just found out. So for now, we're staying the same.
As a sideline note for that, just so everybody knows, you know, we meet, Kelsey and I and Bill and Megan, about 2 weeks before this meeting. So if you have to talk about the agenda, we develop the agenda. So if you have agenda items or something you'd like to see discussed, please feel free to send one of us an email and let us know. I can't promise it'll make the agenda, but we'll, you know, try to, you know, be aware of if you got questions or a group got issues or whatever the case may be. We'd like to, you know, make sure this is everybody's board and that we represent everybody. So I would encourage you, if you do have a question or want to bring something up, I see Megan and Laura kind of looking at me, and John's drooling for some reason. He's rubbing his hand. So anyway, just let you know that. And I want to make sure everybody understands this is everybody's board. This is a public board, so don't think it's being steered in one direction or the other. All right, new business. How about the 2018 program recap presentation? Karen, you want to come on up?
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Llewellyn. I think I've met most of you.
Watch this cord.
Okay. And I apologize for what I sound like. I've been battling a month-long cold now. So, kids, <Yes. laughs> know how that goes. Yes. All right. First of all, I do want to introduce Dora Hernandez there in the back. So Dora is a volunteer program assistant, and I just want to say she has been a tremendous asset to this program. She brings a creativity, a fresh perspective that has been really, really important, I think, for the program to grow. She covered for me for 3 months when I was on maternity leave, and just about everyone I talked to said she did a tremendous job, including people who just seek me out to tell me that. So just want to remind her of what a great job she's doing, and I think it's important that we recognize that. So thank you, Dora. But I'll just give you guys a little bit of a recap of 2018. Let's see, so last year we had about 16,000 volunteer hours, so this includes the work done at Camp Hope. I think many of you know what Camp Hope is. It's up in Battleground. It's a youth camp where they're doing lots of great stuff, but they do outdoor camps from March to November, and they have a lot of volunteers helping to run those programs. The monetary equivalent of those hours is $395,000, so there is a dollar amount that is allocated to each volunteer hour. It's a way to kind of talk about the impact the volunteers make. We also had a total of 114 work parties last year, so that's been steadily going up each year. And Dora is actually the one who predominantly runs those work parties. Adopt the Road is another program that we have going here. And last year we had 46 roadside cleanups, 480 bags of trash were removed. We have 25 active road adoptions, so 25 different sections of road. And we have two more in the works for early this year, so hopefully we'll get them going pretty soon. And I just want to point out that many of these photos that you see are taken by one of our volunteer photographers. He's actually in the back there next to Dora, Paul. But we have a number of volunteer photographers working with us, which has been really great for us. They have been a little bit more talented than we are when it comes to photography, so capturing some really nice photographs and being able to use these in slideshows and brochures and things like that has been really beneficial. Adopt a Park is another one of our programs. Last year we had nearly 1,000 Adopt a Park hours. We have a variety of different people who have adopted parks. Skyview High School, Whipple Creek Restoration Committee, we have a Lions Club, the Hazeldale Lions Club, among a number of different organizations. And all they need to do is each month they typically have a work party at their park that they've adopted. And just clean it up and make it look nice, and we put up a sign for them. Eagle Scouts. So Eagle Scouts are a really important component of the program. They do a lot of bigger projects that we wouldn't normally be able to get to, and the benefit is too is that they are responsible for seeking donations or seeking fundraising to secure the materials they need for those projects. So it's really no cost to us, which is really, really kind of cool. We've had a lot of different things going on last year, including the platform benches at Vancouver Lake were replaced. We have invasive plant removal. We had a new horse mount assist installed at Whipple Creek Park. Various side installations and boot brush stations, as well as storm drain medallion installations. So all the storm drains around the county, we've been trying to mark those with the little medallions that say, dump no, only water here. I can't remember exactly the words, but as a way to remind people not to put other things into the storm drains, so it goes directly to the streams. We currently have 8 scouts that we're working with, scheduled for completion in 2019, and it's only February. So expect many more to come through this year.
Is that Eagle Scout projects, or is that just...
Eagle Scout projects, yep. The Park Host Program, so we have transitioned from caretakers at various locations to park hosts. Park hosts are volunteered. So many of our regional parks, we have people living on site. They are responsible for opening and closing the gates to the park. They're responsible for cleaning restrooms, acting as assistants to park users, letting us know, they're kind of eyes on the park, so they let us know what's going on out there. So last year, over 4,000 volunteer hours were allocated to park hosts. They are in place currently at 8 different locations, and we'll be filling an additional 4 spots sometime this year in 2019. Grants and donations. That's something that, in the past several years that we've been kind of responsible for. We just seek small grants that are a benefit to the program, a benefit to the county. This year we accumulated almost $19,000 in grants. Including some from the Parks Foundation for some regional trail improvements. We got a small grant from Solve to purchase some plants for a planting that we did. The Recreation and Conservation Office, we worked with Camp Hope to obtain a pretty decent sized grant to help fund their camps that they have out there. Well, and Laura's getting to work with them this year on that, which is pretty cool. And then we also got a small Weyerhaeuser grant as well. They did a volunteer event with us last year, and then we're like, oh, we'd like to give you some money. So that's always nice. We've also obtained over $2,000 worth of donations. So Dora is like the queen of seeking donations. It's amazing. She just calls people and they want to donate, goods, whether it's a lot of times it'll be a rental of a piece of equipment for a trail project, or most often what we see is food and beverage donations. And that's really helpful for any of our volunteer events. We like to feed our volunteers. So definitely been helpful there. Let's see. One of our more recent programs that we've been working on is the Vancouver Ivy Near Elimination Squad, or the Vine Squad. That is a joint program with the City of Vancouver. We started that in 2017. Program, we are primarily focusing on invasive English ivy, and we've selected 2 parks, Tenny Creek Park here in the county and Leroy Hagen Park in the city. And we hold regular work parties in the summertime, typically June, July, and August, for folks to come out and volunteer to remove all this ivy. What's been really neat about this is that we're seeing, one, people are coming back to multiple events, and 2, people are coming back year after year. This is, last year was our second year, and we did have many repeat volunteers from 2017. It's something that people can really get involved with and kind of commit to. It's kind of fun.
There's something satisfying to ripping
up the
tree.
It's true, and you can see the impact. I think that's what's really neat. Tenny Creek Park is a great example for really getting, ivy is very hard to eradicate, hence the near elimination, but we're getting pretty close to getting a lot of it out of there, so it's neat to see. We're hoping to eventually expand to other parks through what we're going to call the Adopt-A-Squad program, and what we like to do, and I'll talk about this in a little bit, is we're going to try to start training some of our volunteers who have been with us for a long time to lead events, and who express an interest in doing that. So we're hoping to get some folks to, so we'll be able to have multiple projects at different locations going on at the same time with the help of our volunteer leaders. So we'll see. We're hoping to do that sometime this year. It might take a little bit of time, maybe into next year too, but be nice to see that. excuse me. Volunteer is another program that we have in partnership with the City of Vancouver. This one happens on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month. It's kind of an after-school program that we're looking to do. It's from 3:30 to 5:30 on those Thursdays. And at this event, we not only do a service project, and we do go to various locations throughout the county and various parks, but we also have an educational component. It's short. It's about a 10-minute presentation in the beginning with various co-leaders. So we've had the food bank come in and talk to folks when we're out at Heritage Farm doing a project, Urban Abundance, Columbia Springs. So all these different groups, Washington Trails Association, when we're doing trail work. It's just a way to kind of let volunteers know a little bit more about what they're doing and put a little bit more value on it. I think it really does help for them to truly understand why they're doing what they're doing. It's not just, oh, I'm just getting my community service hours. So this has been a pretty successful program, and it's fun working with the city because they have other options too, so we can really offer a good variety of projects to volunteers. So I think that keeps them engaged and interested. So that'll be starting up again this month, and this month we're going to be at Curtin Springs, I believe, with the Audubon Society, cleaning out all the habitat boxes. We have owl boxes and bird boxes out there. In terms of special events, so each year we do have a number of special events that we really focus a lot on, and they all tend to fall in the fall, seems like. But these are our kind of big service projects that we kind of lead up to throughout the year. So the Day of Service occurs in September, and that's typically the second Saturday in September. And that's been a project that's been going on for several years now. I think we're in the sixth or seventh year. And it's we work with Clark County Connects to host these projects. And this Day of Service is actually throughout the county. It's not just county parks. You have many, many different organizations getting involved to offer a variety of different projects. Last year, we had 8 projects for a total of 288 volunteer hours. And then we had an additional 469 hours at the Heritage Farm with the food bank doing some harvesting there. Make a Difference Day is also another big service day. That's the fourth Saturday in October. This year we had 5 different events for a total of 271 hours. Every year since 2011, we've done a project called the Butt Stops Here. And that's where we actually meet here, and then we go out to various sites and we pick up primarily cigarette butts. We also pick up additional litter as well, but the focus is on cigarette butts, and it's just a way to kind of, you know, remind people, you know, cigarette butts are litter. They don't biodegrade. Does take, you know, there's plastic in them, so it's important for people to recognize that. But last year we collected 30 bags of litter and 16 pounds of cigarette butts. Since we've been doing this project since 2011, we have collected 184 bags of litter and 127 pounds of cigarette butts. To give you perspective, you know, cigarette butts are about like I think it's a tenth of an ounce, really, really light. So pretty gross. That's a lot of cigarette butts.
A lot of pigs around.
Yeah. So, turtle pond planting. This year, November, we worked with several different Clark County groups, including Vegetation Management and Clean Water, to do a major planting at Turtle Pond, which is by Clanline Pond. It's at Salmon Creek, along the Salmon Creek Greenway Trail. Over 3,500 plants were installed. There are 109 volunteers at these two different events, including the Lewis and Clark Young Marines, who are a great group to work with. And they come with all 50 of their kids, and they do some really good work. So been a really successful year for these special projects. Looking ahead for this year, like I had mentioned, the volunteer leadership program, so we are looking to identify some key volunteers who are interested in being leaders, who we can train to go out and lead volunteer events on their own. The benefit of that is that we can have multiple projects going on in one day and, you know, have someone leading rather than just Dora. Frenchman's Bar Beach Cleanup Series. So we've been doing a heavy focus on beach cleanups. Frenchman's Bar, unfortunately, is a beautiful park. It just gets so much litter, especially in the summertime. It's just part of it. You know, it's heavily used, and unfortunately, people don't always follow the rules. In 2018, 626 pounds of trash were removed during those cleanups, and 100 pounds of recycling removed. So it's a lot of garbage out there. That's just in addition to what our maintenance staff is doing, because they're out there every day picking up litter. This year, we'll be hosting the cleanups. We were planning on doing it next Saturday. I'm not sure with the weather what's going to happen there. But definitely April through September of this year, we'll have a cleanup once a month. And then finally, we have our volunteer appreciation celebration. It is going to be March 2nd, so next month, from 10 to 12 here in the Bud Van Cleve Community Room. And of course, you are all invited. We'll send out some invites and more information to you folks as well. But we encourage you guys to come, bring your family. It's just a title, be really open house style, so it's meant to be informal. Just drop in at your convenience. We'll have some snacks, and it's just a chance to catch up with all the volunteers and talk with everyone about what they're doing out there. So that's it. Any questions? I'm happy to answer.
Do you take court mandated service?
So we will, if they are able to attend a group event, so we can provide the supervision. It's just that way we can make sure they're actually there. I do mostly encourage them to sign up with our corrections groups that have the work crews. But if they can make it to a group event, we can accommodate it. Yes.
So with juvenile justice, mm-hmm. they actually provide the support mm-hmm. system with them.
Yep.
So does it have to be a group
in
for that case?
Nope. So the is that restorative community services? Is that what you're thinking? Yeah, we actually do. They do work with us quite a bit, and since they do have mentors, they're not required to attend a group event. Yep.
Some hours to work off done.
Using community service to do
job. Is there something you want to tell us, John?
Fully from careers in tech.
Have a good time over the holidays. All right.
Any other questions?
That's it.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right, next agenda item is the 2018 recap of the parking permit and reservation system. Eric.
Hello. Just a moment here. Okay, well, again, my name is Eric Christensen. I'm the Parking Fee and Shelter Reservations Program Coordinator. Just want to come back to you to give you an update on how we did in 2018. So just a little bit of an overview on shelter reservations is where we'll start. You can make a shelter reservation basically anytime. If your reservation is between May 1 and September 30. Online or in person, over the phone, and then the dates you see here, October 1 to April 30, those are dates when the shelters are not able to be reserved, but you can use them on a first come, first served basis. We have 29 shelters in 5 regional parks and 6 community parks. Here's just kind of a general map so you can see, okay, well, here is where they are all located and the number of shelters at each particular regional or community park. And then as far as we'll just get to the numbers here as far as rentals and revenue are concerned. So you started 2016, we had 1,184 rentals, which totaled a little over $80,000 in revenue. 2017, when we increased the prices, and then added all the community parks, we ended up with just under 1,300 picnic shelter rentals in 2017 with revenue of $112,062. And then for 2018, we had 1,335 rentals in total. With revenue of $126,608.75. So it's a gradual uptick. And what we are seeing is parks are heavily used, and I can have the data to support that. I can show you a little bit more as we get into parking fees as well.
So I do see, though, that you had a pretty significant reduction in the use of the regional parks there mm-hmm. after the fees mm-hmm. went up. Mm-hmm. Total revenue is awesome. Mm-hmm. Has that had any other impacts, positive, negative, or?
Just impacts in other parks. Because, for example, like Louisville, you see a decline at Louisville, but a lot of what happens is I want to have my family picnic or a party at Louisville. Well, we've been booked. You got to make a reservation. You can make a reservation up to a year in advance. So a lot of times people contact us a week, 2 weeks, a month before. We don't have anything, but now because we have other locations, we're able to capture some of that activity and some of that potential revenue. That's generally what I've seen. Because the bottom line is, as you can see, the numbers are increasing, but again, the regional parks is kind of declining just a little bit.
So where did we end up with that issue that Phillida NA brought up about that they had paid to build that structure? Did we come up with some satisfactory resolution for that?
They aren't charged to use the shelter.
Okay,
at Phillida
so
for their event.
For their event. Their activities isn't charged.
They're charged a base permit fee to you for the permit for the children's parade, uh-huh. But not for the shelter.
Okay, so that was taken care of. Mm-hmm. Good. I heard a lot about that.
I bet you did.
Any questions about, any other questions about picnic shelter reservations?
I'm just curious, I noticed the 2016 to 2017, Captain William Clark Park, the number of reservations dropped in half.
Yep.
Was that just because of a fee increase, or was that
no.
was something else going on?
So, we don't charge at Captain William Clark, but and the fee increase didn't really have an impact. We had a lot of flooding. We had to keep
right.
the shelters closed and people out of the park for weeks at a time, both in 2017 and 2018. So it was a little bit less in 2018. We did, but we still had a couple weeks of flooding that just, we couldn't even go in the park. So that's really where the
I don't think the river's actually receded until like June.
Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing.
Memorial Day-ish, I would say. So that's, you know, 4 weeks, you know, of shelters that we just can't use. And the numbers will indicate it's the least popular of the regional parks. Part of that is where it's located. I think it's for some folks, it's just a little harder to get to. And then the feedback sometimes we get is that you have to take all your stuff over the dike. And we can't open the gates for people to get in there because we've tried that before, and unfortunately sometimes people will take advantage of that.
Yep,
so,
sometimes.
So that's just, that's kind of some of the reasons why you see the numbers the way they are there. So as far as parking fee goes, they are a daily fee collected year-round. We typically staff the booths May 1 to September 30, but we will staff them outside of those dates, depending on if we have events, if the weather is nice. For example, I've had some staff working at Louisville and Frenchman's off and on the beginning of this year in order so we can have someone out in the parks to sell annual passes. On weekends, we've sold a couple of hundred, I think, so far just doing that. So it's one of the kind of pieces of feedback that we got last year is it's hard for people, because we did not have online sales, they weren't able to buy a pass on a weekend hour after business hours, so we wanted to do that a little bit this year. And it'll be driven mostly by weather. And again, where we do charge a parking fee, we charge it a parking fee at Frenchman's Bar, Louisville, Salmon Creek on the Klein Line side of Salmon Creek Park, and then at Vancouver Lake. Those are the four locations. The daily fees are here between $2 and $8 per vehicle, depending upon the type of vehicle. Annual pass fees have not changed. They've stayed flat $30 per year. And the pass is valid for a calendar year. So what we will do, however, is start selling the passes in December. So if you buy a pass in December, it's good for an extra month, so you get 13 months of value for it. And we sell them at just up the street here at the 78th Street Operations Center, the Public Service Center downtown in the Permit Center, which is on the first floor. Battleground Community Center has been a big seller for us. They've sold probably 1,600 or 1,700 passes in total, so they've been a huge asset for us in operating the program. In the fee booths, of course, if you want to just, when you go out to the park, you can buy one when we have someone in the booth. And then we started selling passes online. beginning December of this year. So,
do you have any numbers on those?
Yeah, we sold about 250 passes online so far. Yeah. And then as far as the 2019 passes go, we've sold about 1,150 in total so far since we started sales in December, on December 5. So that represents about a quarter of what we would normally sell in a year. So we'll see if we're on pace to exceed what we've done in previous years, but that's a good start. Okay, so then I can get to revenue and passes. 2017, our net revenue was $317,000. Gross revenue was $504,000. You can see our operational expense was about $186,000. Most of that is labor, sheriff, some sheriff work, and then of course just materials. 2018. What I should get to as far as the revenue goes is at the fee booths, we do collect the daily fees, we sell passes, we had the self-pay stations, which were those kind of metal iron rangers, and then we replaced those with parking meters. So that's where this number is up here, the first sales number. This next number of annual pass sales, which is sales that were that occurred at either the public service center or Battleground Community Center. And then this last number here is for passes that are sold online or any kind of parking contracts or parking passes that are sold like to walk-ups or walk-ins over here at 78th Street. Total sales revenue for 2018, $549,000, just a shade under $550,000. Operational expense was flat, and net revenue $365,266.
Active net is just the program you're using for traffic.
It's the reservation. It's kind of basically our business software to registrations, reservations, parking, like sale passes. A lot of times agencies will use it. Like City of Vancouver uses it at Marshall and Furstenberg for their pass sales. That's how they can use it. It has a number of modules, so it's pretty flexible for us. And then just to give you an idea of where passes are sold, how they're sold. 2017, we sold a total of 3,153 passes. This year, 2018, we sold just a little more than 4,100. So about 1,000 more passes. And we did have a full year. Well, it was more of an additional 5 months of pass sales, because in 2017 we didn't start selling passes until April. 2018 passes, we started selling those in December of 2017. So we had, like I said, full 5 months. And our biggest locations where we sell the most number of passes are going to be Louisville, at least as far as kind of your typical brick and mortar Louisville, but the FIBU is probably sold somewhere in the range of 2,500 to 2,700 passes. So they're very busy out there. Which leads into my next slide to give you an idea of just how busy the FIBUs are and how many people are in parks. This slide basically just shows the number of transactions that are conducted either in FIBUs or via our parking meters over the last 2 years. So last year we had 136,000 total transactions. This year, 134, just a little under 130, almost 134,500. So there's a bunch of zeros here in the 2017 column because we didn't have the parking meters in 2017. What I did is anytime they would, at one of the Iron Rangers, which was an envelope, we would just take the envelope and then we'd have to manually process it at the fee booth into the system, our point of sale system, which is, those numbers are just caught in here. Mm-hmm. So, and it was approximately 15,000 to 16,000 of those envelopes that they had to process last year. And we've gotten rid of those, so it's saved an inordinate amount of time and labor, so we don't have to sit through and count in an inefficient system. And the parking meters that we installed in June of this year, June and July, And so basically in 6 months, about 130, about almost 15,000 transactions in about 6 months. And as far as the revenue is caught in here for those parking meters, but it's about $42,000, and they basically paid for themselves in 6 months. And then just to kind of summarize some of the enhancements we've made over the last couple of years. Again, I've mentioned we replaced the Iron Rangers in the previous program iteration. They're using your old school type of cash registers. We've replaced them with a more modernized point of sale system, tablets and so forth. On busy days, for example, at Louisville, or even a couple of times this year at Frenchman's, we've had staff out operating a second lane to help people get into the park a little faster. Lanes for people who have purchased annual passes or if they just can pay by credit card, and that does tend to help. Just to give you an idea of how busy they are, the busiest day at Louisville last year, we had 1,221 total transactions in one day. The peak hours were from 11 to 4, where we had 919 transactions. It's about 184 transactions per hour. So that's 3 cars per minute that are running through there. So it gives you an idea of how busy they are and how quickly they're trying to move people through at Louisville.
There's a big line of cars going.
Oh, sure. And that's why we have 2 lines, and we have a couple other things. There's something else we're going to do this year. I can get to that. For example, another kind of enhancement we've worked on the last couple of years has been the first day of the regattas out of Vancouver Lake. We'll charge, instead of charge having every vehicle come through every day and pay $3 if they want to buy it. If they're coming for all 3 days, we'll just charge them $9 right there on Friday, so that as the event progresses, the line just gets faster and faster, and it makes a huge, really big difference in terms of just getting people into the park and frankly their satisfaction with the program. Again, I did mention online pass sales. Potentially, we could be looking at adding additional parking meters in regional parks to help people get in the park faster. Some video security at the fee booths, handheld card readers. And then I think the last item here, which I think we'll start promoting and informing customers about, is a mobile application on Apple and Android phones, so that people can just pay remotely. They can pay before they come to the park. They can pay when they're in line. So that'll take time for us to get the word out, but that'll definitely help with efficiency and hopefully compliance.
How are they going to prove that, Eric, that they can pay if there's no people?
So the system, the vendor is the same vendor that we purchased the parking meters from.
Okay.
And so they provide basically a website. So as people come in, all we have to do is just look at the website, look at the plate, off you go. So there's still some work to do on that, but that's basically how it'll work. And we would provide it to the sheriff's office as well. So all they have to do, it's very simple, log in and look at plates. And if it's not there, then get a ticket. If it is there, then go right ahead. So. Okay, and then finally, just so these are just, I want to give you an overview of the fee programs that we operate and where we ended up for 2018. Parking fees, picnic shelter rentals, park use permits, which is this line here, permitted events, sports field rentals, which is this park here, Luke Jensen, and then we have maintenance agreements and concessions. So we ended up a little over $1 million this year in revenue. So. And I think one thing I failed to mention was, you know, looking at this number here with total number of transactions, it gives you an idea of like, okay, I start to think about how can we leverage that number to perhaps generate additional sponsorships or partnerships, because I feel like that number, if you know how many people are coming out and visiting our parks and staying in our parks for hours, you know, sometimes a full day, like there's certainly value to that. How do we kind of leverage that to generate additional revenue. So
that's that concession line that needs to increase.
And that's what we are.
And I know you're working on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to hopefully have some more food vendors in parks this summer too. So.
What is your occupancy rate on your shelters?
I'm not sure I have that. I don't have that number.
Well, I think at some point we're going to have to get serious about mm-hmm. adding more shelters mm-hmm. because I do believe that they're almost booked out all the time. I know there's some off hours that are mm-hmm. still vacant. But.
What I will tell you is that our system, it does track occupancy rate, but it tracks in such a way that it'll include the entire year. So I have to refine it. So yeah. It skews the number because it takes the total number of hours that the park is available or open, so it doesn't give me an accurate read. I can dial it down a little bit, but not something I can just quickly. Any other questions?
All right. Great report.
Thank you.
Good job.
Very much.
Okay.
All that money just goes into operations.
General fund. Goes back to general fund or MPD.
Goes back to the MPD or general fund.
Yeah, not designated for anything.
Right.
But it certainly helps.
Absolutely. You know, it does help our dependence with general fund to get us off of it, you know, little by little. So our hope is to be completely off general fund at some point in time, but it's going to be a while out.
All right, so Kelsey, do you want to have a little park design discussion?
Sure, I'll make this super fast. I just wanted to put out feelers to what the group thinks about, I don't know, every time we travel, I end up at a park with a playground. And I've seen a lot of sort of innovative park design out and about that I would kind of like to see more of here. Like I think we made a good step in Otto Brown with that really cool play structure with the bike. It has components with the neighborhood. The bicycle is like a draw. I was kind of talking to Bill how I feel like a lot of our parks, we have the same blueprint. We do the same thing in each park. The path, the playground, you know, the half court basketball here. So I just kind of wanted to put out feelers to the group on, we don't build that many parks per year. I wish we built 100 parks a year, so this wouldn't be a problem. But kind of talking about when being more involved as the board with what we want parks to look like, what amenities. I know it's very neighborhood specific, and I don't want to take anything away from the neighbors, but I don't know, Bill talked about like when we put things out to bid, maybe we get to look at some of the designs to ourselves and have some input. I just feel like our parks look very, very similar. And I think the ones that we do build that are different are drawing people to them because they are different. So I kind of just want, I kind of want to open the discussion on what we're doing in our parks, and it doesn't have to necessarily be fueled by money necessarily, because some of the things I've been visiting don't necessarily look expensive. They're just doing different concepts, like, you know, full, like your Bigfoot thing, right? That's what I'm talking about. Something like that that's different, that draws people to a park. It's a different sort of thing than the playground, the walking path. And that's not to insult our parks right now, but just maybe looking forward to see what other jurisdictions are doing and could we improve and make our designs a little more exciting.
I think that's a great idea, Kelsey. Do you all remember Marie's presentation at the first All mm-hmm. Tab on the innovative park concepts?
Yeah.
They've got a lot of information already documented. And I think your point was well taken, that we don't want to take away from the neighborhood control.
Yeah.
But I do believe that when we go out to the neighborhoods, that we usually provide them several options mm-hmm. and then let them vote on that.
Right.
So engaging in innovative designs prior to the options being presented, yeah. I think that's a wonderful idea, and it's time.
So I'll. I like the basic idea of, you know, push for innovation and the like. Where I have some concern is acting as a policy body versus getting into the weeds. On the Port Commission, I'm always fighting to say, you know, we say go there and we let staff figure out how to get there. I would be much more comfortable with that same idea here. We say be more innovative and have staff come back to us and say this is what we've done. I feel like we're diving into areas where we're not the experts.
And I'm fine with that. I guess the how we get there doesn't matter. I just want the product to be something different. You know, and the mechanism of how we end up at something different, I don't necessarily want to become a review body for, oh, well, I don't like that bench there. Like, that's not what I had in mind. Just when we send these things out to bid, and I know it's do something innovative, but...
But I get where you're coming from.
It's vague, but yeah, I want us, like, we went to this park in San Diego that I told Bill, I haven't seen a teeter-totter in Clark County for 60 years because they became very unsafe, but they had this new sort of teeter-totter that... It was impossible to hurt yourself on, that my kids could not get off of it. And I'm like, you know, just we've kind of, we're not doing, we're just kind of like, I think we use the same companies each time and we kind of get the same product. And I don't know if we're not being more specific in our directions of, hey, we want to see, you know, something that really corresponds with like a nature play area or focuses on this or has a giant Bigfoot in the middle of it. Again, I don't care how we get there. I just would like to maybe see something different in Clark County because I think that's why people go to, like, I drive past Costco and my kids always make me stop at the farm park because the playground looks like a tractor.
I was going to bring that up. That was probably the most popular park I've ever heard of in this area because of the tractor and then the farm animals.
Uh-huh.
I mean, people drive, like you say, way...
And we're not supposed to, technically, because it's a neighborhood park. I know I'm
but
being naughty there.
No, no, we're not at.
But
I'm looking at you, John, because you live out that way.
Kelly, go ahead.
One of the points that I think we should keep in mind, Clark County is the home of one of the biggest, most popular play equipment companies in the entire country, maybe the world, in Columbia Cascade Company. And those people are willing to come to us and redesign, create new product if we approach them with that. But I really want and like to think that we're going to be pretty loyal to our job producing community here in this community. And Columbia Cascade Company has been really good to work with over the years, and I hope we continue to work with them. The Vancouver School District uses them pretty regularly. There are some issues that they always come up with, why they can't do one thing or another, and we don't understand a lot of those things because there's so many liability issues and creative play equipment that we don't understand, and lawyers always stop them from doing it. But if we're going to do this creativeness, let's keep in mind we have some pretty amazing company here in this community.
Kind of on the same perspective, as we've been redoing our playgrounds with our bond program and such. Out at Lakeshore, we're still working on that. I don't know if you guys remember me talking about this for years because it feels like the longest grant application of my life. But it has really evolved with the concept of and the controversy around inclusive play without structures and or standalone structures and large structures. There's this, the executive director, Cody, from Harper's Playground lives here in Vancouver. He lives in the Lakeshore area. His students go to school. So just we've got that amazing research around inclusion. And Harper's is a very distinct perspective. But it's interesting to hear that very distinct perspective on the playground. It's very different But it really pushes some of our thinking and our boundaries around play structures or interconnected play structures or just standalone play structures and what that means for students who are in, or students, children who are in wheelchairs or have any kind of disability. So if we're going to innovate and look differently, I'd really love and can make some connections if we need to around people who know how to do sort of like therapy areas for students. And I mean, we build playgrounds with these structures that have the intent of pleasing the extroverts of our community, but there's as many introverts as there are extroverts. And so having that mix within your park is really important.
Yeah, well. And that's such a good point because a lot of these, most of these new parks I'm going to when we go on vacation, they all have the soft surface. So every kid with a disability can get on that. And I know we say the bark chips are ADA accessible. Kids with little walkers cannot push through those bark chips. I'm sorry. Kids who have issues walking cannot walk through those bark chips.
There's also just the concept of if I'm in a wheelchair and I wheel up and I'm playing with my friends and my friends want to get off the play structure that we're on, are we still included? Am I still included?
Yeah.
Or do I have to back out the other way to go get to be included again? And so just that how we do playground and where we put play things, and there should be risk and there should be, you know, I mean, there's all these interesting conversations that play has really evolved over the years.
Yeah, and like I've said this before, the nature play area at Sorensen is more popular than the playground. I mean, because kids are in there like, we're building bird's nests, we're going exploring through the prune trees. So I'm not even talking in an essential like playground way. I wouldn't even care if we built a neighborhood park without a traditional playground, but had some
and that's
way
Harper's, that's really to play. Harper's perspective, yeah. Is that the traditional components of a playground are very different.
Exactly. So that's kind of where I'm going with this is I don't want to micromanage the process, but I think I want to, hopefully this, our board can encourage some different sort of
what if maybe provide some direction, maybe not policy,
right?
But certainly, I think it behooves us
to
provide some direction.
Kelsey's onto a great idea here in that back when we were still together with the city of Vancouver, we actually got together, sat down with our then planners and landscape architects, and came up with a set of minimum standards for neighborhood parks as well as community parks, right? So each neighborhood park should have 1 acre of irrigated lawn. Each park will have a play structure. Each park will have minimum 10-foot wide walks, that kind of stuff. As far as creativity, that really wasn't discussed. And so all too often, we're kind of subject to the creativity of our design and engineering firms that we contract with, you know? And so they'll give us probably 3 renderings of what their thoughts are, and we try to pick one, or we will actually go out to the open houses and let our citizens pick between what the design firms have chosen, pre-chosen for them. And so we know that there's been this huge movement for nature play equipment, you know, and all-inclusive play stuff. And so I think we really need to go there. I think we really need to take a fresh look at how we create our parks, you know, like Jennifer's talking about. You know, we want all the kids to be included at all times, if at all possible. And we don't have to necessarily cater to the extroverts, you know, but it should be a fresh look. And if there's something else out there, like Kelsey was talking about, if there's teeter-totters out there, we don't have any here in Clark County that I know.
They're so fun. Like, I went on the teeter-totter. It's so fun. Like, it's legit fun to ride a teeter-totter. I forgot.
Yeah, and then what Kelly said about Columbia Cascade, they're a huge manufacturer here in town. We do try to buy locally. One thing I've noticed about them is they'll try to come up with anything that we put in front of them. So if they don't have it, they'll make it. And
what
so,
if we were to invite Columbia Cascade to come to one of these
meetings?
They'd
love to come.
And
oh, yeah.
I think
yeah,
that would be
and
a very
and
good
ask
thing.
Ask them, how do we encourage the innovation and let them tell us what to do, basically?
What's nice about this, like Columbia Cascade is a firm, they do sell worldwide, nationwide. They see what's out there around the nation, and so they've got great ideas. And I don't know if our parks are themed, you know, geographically based themed, you know, where you have different themes down in California versus Kansas or wherever else. It'd be nice to know, get an idea what ideas are out there. What's really active with kids right now? You know, what's the latest trends?
The city has gone with theme parks. And so the last couple parks have been a theme, and all of them going forward have some kind of theme. Like a big something that is, you know, that is the direction they also decided to go away from, sort of just this post and platform type structures and go more themed.
And I don't want to just narrow it down to like, let's just only focus on kids using parks and playgrounds. Like, I want to also make sure, like, there's, like, in Marie's presentation on innovative playgrounds, I remember this caught in my head because I've been sometimes I'm so bored watching my kids play on the playground. I'm like, what could I be doing? How she showed, like, this tread. It's like, it's not electric at all, but it's based on gravity in this park where parents can walk on it right next to the playground while the kids are playing. So you still have them in sight, but you're getting exercise while you're watching your kids play. And I thought, like, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. Because, like, how many parents would want to, like, get exercise, but they don't want to be a quarter mile on the trail away from their kid?
Oh,
John's like me. I hope he's able to snatch us up. So I don't know.
Now we know why you need community service there.
Yeah. So.
Jim, go ahead.
When the park is being planned and designed, to what extent are the neighbors immediately surrounding it involved in coming up with ideas?
We come up with like three designs and we do an open house and we say vote on which one you like the most.
But they're not involved prior to that and coming up with ideas?
They have some,
There are some preliminary stuff.
Yeah.
They come up with
ideas. Usually fairly engaged.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. And so they come up with all their ideas, suggestions, and those get written down and they get transferred over to the designers who try to integrate those ideas into the design.
One difference today from what we had when we were doing all the parks, we had five landscape architects on board in the parks department in those days. What do we have today?
Zero.
Yeah.
Countywide.
So let's do this.
That's it.
Yeah.
So let's do this, Megan, if we can make a note to invite Columbia Cascade and Innovation, is that their name, or Inclusion?
It's a specific company, but I mean, there's a couple of, if we want a broad perspective, I mean, we could do a Nature Play Designs does great work with Jane and Cody with Harper's Playground, but very different perspectives. There's, of course, Columbia Cascade. I would love to have them here because I can't get them to respond to me. So I would like to get someone in the host.
I see them all the time. So,
let's do this. Jennifer, if you can just send us some names of folks.
I wouldn't do them in the same meeting because
no, we don't have
totally
to.
Different
points. Very different perspectives.
Understand. Yeah. And this will be over a period of time. This won't be next month's meeting necessarily.
No, they need more time.
But let's start having maybe one of our segments in our program as an education or an update on what's out there in the industry. I think that would be a great opportunity, and perhaps we can marry some of the county folks into that. They can come to the meeting when we have these presentations, and that'll give a chance to update the county staff on that too. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
Well, and the city, like you said, is working on that now, so Julie might have
sure, that's really and quite honestly, I see this as maybe an all PAB subject that we could have at some maybe the next meeting or next quarter's meeting or something
good,
like that
like you
too.
Said, Marie awesome. Has so, some
educational component, I think, has gone
right.
by the wayside.
Right.
And that really was one of the primary reasons for bringing us together is to expand our visions.
You know what we should really do is invite Columbia Cascade to this coming all PAB and see if we'll donate some money or food or something while they're in.
I like the way you
we can have a conversation. I don't have a problem having a conversation with somebody. Somebody can get me a rep or, you know, a contact point.
Yeah.
Kelly, if you can get a contact point.
They'd be more than happy to come and join
our major
us.
Help
I mean, you know, that just because we have one piece of the curriculum or agenda put together doesn't mean we can't add
right.
to that.
And the thing on that is that it would be a positive for them too to
sure.
have
sure.
all of these different parks people.
Oh, sure. I would think they would jump at a chance to have that situation.
So not that I don't like Columbia Cascade, but I would encourage us to also think about there's different perspectives on playgrounds.
Yeah. Right.
Columbia Cascade sells equipment. And other perspectives are not
all of that equipment.
Equipment.
They're different as night and day.
Yes.
So we got to understand that.
You have to start somewhere. Yes. The thing is you have to start somewhere.
I just would encourage us to make sure we're looking at.
Yeah.
Well, and I think just because we have one at this meeting doesn't mean we can't have it at the next meeting. So.
I will point out that Columbia Cascade provides all the playground equipment for the city of New York, and they have for the last 25 years. And, you know, they're pretty tough back there. So. And some of their equipment there has nothing that looks like anything we do here. So they do what the particular agency wants.
It's always
wants.
Good to get ideas.
Also, the new benches at the waterfront were done by Columbia Cascade based on the architects that did the waterfront. So they're pretty flexible. And I do like to keep our jobs here.
Yeah, I like the local, the money local. But you also have a real, especially the ADA component.
It doesn't mean that they don't. Columbia Cascade doesn't rep the equipment that you need to have that
absolutely.
Is ADA compliant or that is inclusive play. Because they do. They rep those pieces of equipment. But Columbia Cascade, if you ask like a designer from Columbia Cascade to put your playground together, they're going to put together a playground. But if you have a. You may have a desire to understand deeper around that type of play structure, which is lovely, kids love it, and we want to do that. But also, what does it really mean to have a truly inclusive play for a student? And it might be a single structure just by itself, not
or
within
just a rock.
Massive structure, right? So it doesn't mean that they're not compatible. It just
exactly.
It just means that there's.
Sure.
So much
so
to
we can nibble
think
one
about. Yes, right.
All right, so we'll move along because I've done not a very good job of managing the time on this one, trying to. So anyway.
To be continued.
To be continued, obviously, throughout our deals. All right, so we'll move into the manager's report. So Bill.
Okay, I'd like to bring Kevin back up, talk about the Hantwick Trust Fund transfer, an update.
Okay, so towards the end of your packet is another map figure showing what DNR has proposed and a letter to concerned citizens who have essentially who have reached out to them. It's an update on where they stand with trust land transfer process and the timber sale and everything involved in that. So what we know right now is that the timber sale is on hold for the time being. If you look at this map up here, start with, there's purple hatching, that's county owned property. The white dashed line through the middle is the trail, which is on DNR property, so we don't own the trail. It's on an easement that we lease from DNR. They came to us wanting to exchange this land for this land. We figured an exchange wouldn't work because of the grant money associated with us buying that land originally. So what we settled on was a buffer that we would send through the Trust Land Transfer Program. And so DNR at a statewide level puts together this list of properties that they manage for the trust, which benefits schools and county, essentially county tax base. And they identify properties that don't really fit very well, that they would like to offload so that they can use money to go buy other properties that the legislature will give them. So this trust land transfer for that 200-foot buffer, which is kind of the green stippled pattern there, would, if approved by the legislature, come to Clark County. So it's part of a list of maybe 10 or 15 projects that have gone to the governor, gone to the legislature, now are being considered as part of the state capital budget. Where it goes from here is anybody's guess. Just like anything in the capital budget, if you could figure that out, be a rich man. So we're waiting to hear, essentially. On the side, the woman that came to talk to you guys a few months ago, Linda Lorenz, has been in contact with us again, and she's working in an alternate angle with some of our state legislators in an attempt to not use the trust land transfer process and get DNR to essentially give this land to Clark County in some other fashion. She explained what she was looking at, and I didn't really get the full understanding of it, but apparently there's some other option that could be on the table if the county were to agree to take. And what she's targeting is all of this shaded, so everything that we've talked about already, plus all of this shaded area, I think it totals close to 50 acres. So we would have to convince our county manager and council that we should accept that property.
To clarify, how it is now, the trust land transfer, the view shed is preserved on the trail.
Yes.
To clarify, if she gets the 50 acre thing, that is her view shed from her property. It doesn't affect the trail as a whole for like public park users. Like either way, the trail.
The trail itself will have
trees
a buffer.
A buffer.
Yes, on both sides.
Okay, so in terms of like if she comes back and in support, asks us for support, you need to probably keep that in mind. That the trail itself still is going to have that buffer.
Right. Yeah. There may be locations along the trail where you can see through 200 feet of trees and tell that there was a timber harvest on the other side. I'm sure you will be able to do that, but yes. Okay. There will be a buffer on either side of the trail.
The timber scale is up quite a bit over the top.
Yeah, it's up at the top of the, it's up near the top of the slope. There's a few locations that are on the slope that they're proposing to harvest. So that's essentially where we are in the process. Bill and I have a meeting with county manager in a week or two.
I'm not sure if I told you. I think Ahmad was asking if we should put a list of pros and cons together.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, I did see that.
I think Ahmad wants to know what liabilities we might incur by adding the extra land, you know, that Lynn is asking for. You know, and what benefits is it to us? You know, so there's that.
Yeah, and could we follow up? I would like to know. I would like to see that pros and cons list at the next meeting if it's available, because I'm curious what the pros of us doing that would be for Clark County trail users.
And it's a and we took that field trip up there, and we got a kind of an eye shot of, you know, we took Hunter Becker, our forester, up there, kind of got an idea of what it would look like from the trail, you know, from this buffer up, you know. And I think our view shed should be pretty well preserved with what was proposed by Kevin.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin. Well,
okay, so we'll continue on with a manager's report. You've got the report in front of you, and those of you that read the end before you read the beginning.
We already did. We can tell by people's faces.
We can tell by people's faces. So, Bill, I'll let you speak.
Yeah, so, real quick, I'll go through Camp Bonneville real quick.
I say we don't accept this payment.
Yeah. All in favor, denied.
So, we had this week Camp Bonneville master plan meeting, and that was a work session that we presented in front of the council, and Kevin did a great job of presenting on that. We also had Jerry Barnett and Greg Johnson. I believe you met them when we went on our tour out at Camp Bonneville, those folks, and talking about the master plan going forwards. We did it back in November, however, we had a change of board members. We had added two new ones. And so we thought we'd kind of dust it off, revise it just a little bit, and go back after them, so we have a fresh fresh background and moving forward what we plan to do and how we're going to put a group together, like a technical advisory group, to help oversee the process, and then to go out and do select a group of professionals, to work on the master plan process. And so that is moving forward. There's going to be a lot more coming forward. I know in the past that we've actually selected some members. John, you were there at the work session. I believe it was John.
Adam, I think, was the other.
Well, who was it?
Adam, I think, was the other guy.
I thought it was Dave.
Dave
Weston.
Dave Weston.
That's what I said.
Yeah, I believe
that's
so.
What you said. Yeah.
So there was some discussion about reducing the size of the PAB, the Parks Advisory members, down to one possibly, but I think we'd like to hold the two if we can, yeah. Just in case we have an absence or something. But so Kevin put a group of folks together. I think it was a group of say 12 to 14 folks back in November, and we'll probably take a look at that same list. And I think that by this work session, there were some folks that were relieved to know in the Prepstall area that live around Camp Bonneville were relieved to know that they're going to have representation on this technical advisory committee, if you will. And so that was a bone of contention because that was on again, off again, and now it's back on again. So that was good. So there'll be a lot more to come as we progress forward with the Camp Bonneville master plan. So. Kevin's taken the lead as a project manager on that, so he'll be in charge of keeping you up to date in the future. So, I do have I need your help on a property that came to our attention for sale that just hit us this week. And so, we'll take a look at this. This is Whipple Creek Regional Park right here. And as you can see, we own an enormous chunk of property in Whipple Creek. This little piece right here, this little notch, is up for sale. It's about 1.18 acres. It's got homes on it. I believe that the tax assessed value on the land is about $100,000+. And these homes that are fairly derelict, the tax assessed value on those are about $300,000+ right now. So for a total of maybe $400,000 to $500,000 appraisal value, which we expect is probably going to come in at, do we want to spend money in purchasing this property? So can you zoom back out again? Is there anything kind of see holistically what we're looking at? So here's all of Whipple Creek Park. So geographically based, I mean, this is Clickenny. This is the fairgrounds right here, 179th Street. And so this is 31st Avenue, 21st Avenue, coming down to our actual main use area. So there's a little sliver right here that has always been owned privately. And do we want to own that piece? The one thing I was thinking about, this is connected to Park Impact Fee District 10, right here at this line, so it actually touches right here. So we could actually use Park Impact Fee District 10 to purchase this property if we so wish. So let's bring...
Put the aerial on or off?
You can just leave it, that's fine. Right now, a big push for the county, let's bring it over this way just a little bit farther, Jeremy. Here's 179th Street Interchange, right here. This is a big deal right now. We have two big developers that are really pushing the county to make these improvements so that they can then start working or doing their work. East of I-5, is this Killian Northwest?
Yeah.
They have about a 200-acre, maybe a little over 200 acres that they're working with to develop. Even both north and south of 179th Street. As we go east to 50th Avenue, we've got Holt Homes. They have, I believe, 120 to 150 acres themselves that they're working with. This is all in 5th District 10. These are substantial developments that are going to come in our way in the future. I guess what I need your help with is, should we, Killian, just so as some background, I think I may have told you about this 2 years, maybe a little longer. Killian approached us about their plan to develop this in both real estate as well as industrial commercial. And they wanted to see if we wanted to partner with them on putting a community park out in this area. Somewhere here, north or south, but mostly north along this green belt, purchasing land, developing land into a park property and in conjunction with them as a partnership. We haven't heard from them yet, but I'm sure they're putting something together right now. We probably expect to hear from them, I would say, in the next year or so. And so I would imagine that we'll probably hear from Holt as well, since it is such a large subdivision with 150 acres. So my question, should we focus our attention on buying that piece of property at Whipple Creek, or should we hold on to our funds and use it for another purpose, to buy property east? And so it's our intent to try to buy properties to where people can walk to the properties. You know, every You know, we have to walk no more than a half mile, right? So we can either dump our money into a big existing regional park, or we can try to establish a yet a new footprint. So that's where we're at right now. We've got easily enough money to buy that property. I think there's $800,000 or $900,000 within Fifth District 10 acquisition alone. Concurrency on that is November of 2024, so we have plenty of time to spend that money. So we, I believe that, well, Jeremy, you were talking to the real estate agent, and they have a little bit of time to
They're not in hurries.
We're not in a big hurry, so we have a little bit of time to consider this.
Did
so,
they contact you, or did you contact
them? They contacted us.
Yeah. Well, 178th or 79th, that's not in PIF 10, right? Or is that in PIF 10?
It is. It actually touches Whipple Creek Park.
It is. So, I mean, but the intersection off of I-5 and the Killian property, that's not in PIF 10?
Yes, or it is.
Yeah,
it goes
okay.
All, actually, PIF 10 actually extends, do you have the map up?
Here's right there.
Order. It is, okay.
But could we do both?
You want the aerial also?
Could we strike a deal? I mean, we always talk about making...
We could do both. Yeah, it's just
we always talk about making relationships with developers and how do we get what we want out of it versus a pocket park. And
what is that could be opportunity to provide, though?
Yeah, if we could only do one, I would say we've got something over here. We need something over near the new development. But if we could do both, because we both know that PIF 10 has very little land that's been available for purchase.
Right.
And so where we have the opportunity to preserve it, it's great. But we definitely are going to need it to service all the new build out.
So my question is, what good is that one acre? In other words, would we make it into a parking lot, which could be really good, or is it just completing a rectangle, at which point I'm like, not that excited.
I mean, and we've got three properties that have a little notch out like that. And so...
I can tell you, I'm building Ogden Elementary School right now, and our board repeatedly chose not to buy the three properties on the edge of the part that we're building. Mm-hmm. We're building the school directly behind these three properties. I have an entrance in on one side and an entrance in on the other. I've got these three homes directly in the center that everyone's going, man, I wish our board would have agreed to buy that small weird property that's right in the middle, and we come and but at the time the board's like, what do we need that for? We don't need that extra piece of something. We got access, you know. And now that we're building on it, we're just like, well, that's something we couldn't foresee.
You have no
really
control over that little piece.
Right.
Somebody
right.
could
that's,
come in
that's
and buy
really
it.
Good argument.
Yeah.
And I'm
you
and, the, and these are lovely neighbors
exactly.
that we have there, but
exactly.
it's like everyone goes, what? How does it work?
Yeah,
right
away.
The priority is over where the new build is, because obviously we have a place for people to go with Whipple Creek.
Right.
However, just knowing how difficult it's been to have opportunity in PIF 10 makes me not want to turn my back on it.
Two property, the two developments, those are PUDs, right?
Yes.
So they have to provide some park lands and designated area under their agreement, under their development. So, but there's no reason we can't give credit and work a deal where we could take that one piece and get that one sliver out of the middle. Because I guess the question becomes, as we said, toward the future, what becomes of that piece of property?
Exactly.
Well,
and now
we're kicking
ourselves for not doing
it. Yeah, I've seen that
more
than once.
Yeah, sort of. The reverse to my comments is not so much what are we going to use it for, but what happens to it if we don't buy it.
Right. Exactly.
Good question.
Would we have to knock the structures down? And how much is that going to cost?
Well, the thing about that is the structures are worth more than the land right now, mm-hmm. because everything's elevated. So we have, I think, the assessed value on those two homes that are on there are about $300,000+. And we'd normally knock those down. We might use it as a lease spot for a while, but I'm not sure what kind of condition they're in. So Jeremy and I are going to go look at them. So, you know, normally we'd snap that up so we have, you know, a nice square piece of property to work with. It's easier to develop. But, you know, we just developed Otto Brown. That's got the same scenario. We got a big chunk missing out of the middle of it, you know. And then also, what was the other one?
Oh, you have to Vigra. Fence against it, too, around it.
You got a fence around it, yeah.
What are the other two that have notches out of them?
Vigra and Otto Brown, the one that we just built.
All
And so,
yes.
Jimmy, have a
comment. I was thinking about, when I look at that property, I think about the potential that, because Whipple Creek is a great natural area that has tremendous educational resource as a natural area. Right now, the only access, well, there's three places to access it, but the 21st parking lot is somewhat limited, and it's really dependent, it's really best used for horse access.
Right.
But the for people hiking, if they could come in on 21st and walk the trails, that would be a much better access for hiking. It's actually, 21st is great access for hiking too, but 31st would be a good alternative for hiking in. But also the houses that are there, if one of those could be turned into kind of a resource center, then the schools would be able to come there and have educational programs where come in and hike the trails with the kids and use a resource center there as an educational center. I think about some of the other school parks, like if you go to Portland, Tryon Creek State Park. Mm-hmm. Tryon Creek State Park has a building there that's a tremendous resource center that people come to for educational programs, have a lot of educational displays, natural native habitat displays. There's a lot of material and information that happens there as a resource center. If Whipple Creek had a resource center like that, that could be a tremendous resource for the region.
We could argue both directions all night.
Oh, yeah.
You sure could. Yeah.
I think I'm glad you're bringing it to us now.
Yeah. Just want to get your opinion on it.
Just look at the opposite.
I mean, we could try to do both, you know. And
if we're left out of that other project, we're going to feel bad about it because that's going to be an amazing project that's going on. The other one.
But if we can provide them credit,
but we're also
on the same
media. Yeah. Fee for all of that. So
we're talking about building.
Let's buzz them out.
I mean, might be the model for the credits that we're looking at doing in the future.
And it'll be out there far enough to where we can.
And that PIF is just going to explode once those developments start. I mean, you're going to have money in that PIF once those start to do things. But I don't want to blow an opportunity to like collaborate with a developer because that's what we've been working so hard to do.
Right.
So I don't want. I think that relationship is more important than this piece of property personally. So if I have to pick one, if that's. That's it. That's what I think.
I don't know that we got to pick one.
Too.
That's
the key. Over here. It's more important. But I would hate to see us miss this opportunity as well.
You said we had the money to do both.
Yeah,
right?
We've got the money.
We
got the money to buy now.
We'll spend down our acquisition funding to buy this piece, and so we'll negotiate it. I mean, if you're comfortable with me going after both,
I think that's the best bet to try to negotiate the best possible deal on both sides. Work it that way.
Okay.
Even if it's some donation.
Sounds
or whatever.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll maybe we'll come to you this next month and ask for a motion to support that. And so
who knows, in 15 years someone's gonna be wanting to develop this park and they're saying, thank you for the vision for buying that one.
That's right.
Not a problem.
Okay, well, thank you. Appreciate that.
I think it's still you.
Is it me? We're here. We had a work planning session yesterday with our public works director, Maude Kaomi. And we all took turns. Everybody, all of the departments within public works gave their presentations. But we gave presentations, Kevin and I, and Doug Keller and Cherry Burnett. I forgot to hand this out, but I thought you'd like to take a look at this. So this, what you see here in front of you is all the different programs within parks and lands. And you can see, I kind of just wanted to show you how diverse parks and lands really is with all the different programs. And then each one of these is like the tip of an iceberg. There's programs within each one of these as well. So we've got a lot going on. Over to your left, you can see our staffing. So we got 54.75 FTEs, and we also bring on an additional 88 FTEs, or temp staff in the summertime, just to help us. And so it takes 142.75 people to run parks on an annual basis. So it's kind of a neat look. So on the back is just, it's basically the work plan for maintenance, just to show you what it costs to mow on an annual basis, you know, the $747,000, and you just kind of go right down the list here. So the resources needed. So I thought I'd share that with you. So some paper. And then lastly, of course, the last bullet on the list here is I've given it a lot of thought. And
give me some more.
I turned 55 in December. I thought, you know what? You know, this job is getting more and more busy all the time. And
what happened to work?
And I'm getting older.
65.
What's that?
Yeah,
said,
67.
What happened to work 65?
I will, Kelly. Probably in a different capacity. I'm going to take a break, and then I'll probably come back to public life sometime in the future, but probably in a lesser capacity. I will still be active as a volunteer. You might see me on the committee for the Camp Bonneville, and you might see me back here, you know, in the Parks and Recreation
Board. I heard there's an opening on the advisory board.
Yeah, I tried that, Barbara, already. I suggested that.
But, no, just, you know, one of my most favorite things that I do for in parks is being on this advisory board with you guys. You guys are fantastic people, and so I will miss you dearly, but I won't be that far away, so I'll come back and see you. And so I always want to stay engaged. But no, it's time for me to head on out. I'm getting older, and so we just need somebody that's younger, smarter, and better looking than me to carry the torch.
55 is not old.
Trust us.
You're old on 55.
I know.
Well, so the thing is Kevin, he's got the younger part, the better looking.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All depends on how you look at it.
It's my thought that Kevin will be the interim Parks and Lands Manager until we fill the position, and hopefully Kevin will go after that position when the recruitment does finally come up. And so, I know we'll be in good hands, you know, and I'll be around to help onboard the new manager when they do come on board. It's not going to be right away. There's a financial piece that has to be recognized. So. I would suspect that we'll probably see my replacement come on board somewhere in the neighborhood of September, is my guess.
We'll hurry up and buy that property then.
Yeah. No, we can actually get that started right away. So, but no, I'll be in touch. But I will, if I'm not around all the time, I will let you know that I will dearly miss you all, because you're a wonderful board, and I thank you for sticking out with me since we started this thing up in 2014. It's been wonderful.
Well, you've been great. Yeah. Been through a lot of different parks, people and parks, directors and parks, city, county. And you're going to be hard to top. Thank you.
So you're leaving in April?
April 3rd will be my last day.
Are we going to party?
Party? Sure.
That's maybe after
every day after.
We'll come up with something.
Yeah.
Trust me. Yeah, no, we will. We will. All right.
You know, I'm into meeting really well.
And not on time either.
Not on time either, yes. Sorry about that. So, unless anybody has something they would like to say, I'll go ahead, Sue.
I can't follow that, of course, but I do need to announce that we did Wednesday night hire a new executive director for the Park Foundation.
Is it Bill?
I wish he would have been fantastic. Let me see what I can do. No. I was with her this morning to sign the acceptance letter, if I would have known. But her name is Delanne Reju. She works for SHARE as the director of volunteers. She also used to be the owner of Smokey's Pizza. So if anybody's been in the area long, you know Del Ann probably. And she is the one that started very involved in the Hazeldale Parade and made it what it was. So she's, I think she'll be fine. So she'll start February 25th. She starts for 2 weeks, goes on vacation. So I don't know if she'll be at your next meeting or not, but.
So a question for you is, when she starts to come to this, are you going to continue coming as well?
Well, probably not if she's going to come, you know, because I'm here as a, for in her place. But I'm not sure what she's going to want to do. This morning I showed her your agenda. I said, now I need to get going because I'm going to this, which you will probably want to sit on. And she's, I'm not sure, you know, she's not committing to anything until she gets on board, and rightly so, and see what she wants to do and what. And she mentioned, when I introduced her to staff, that she stays in the office. She plans to stay in the office most of the time. And I said, oh, no, you'll be out. So, you know, we've got to work a lot of things out first. But since you're leaving, I'll leave with you. We'll just
go out.
All right, now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let's not together. Have any kind of
mass exodus. Everyone turns to
their feet.
Yeah, we're not going to do that. All right, anything else for the good of the order?
I have a quick thing. My sister works for Public Health, Clark County Public Health, and she was interviewed by CNN today for the measles outbreak. Dr. Melnick, so if anyone wants to hear more about measles and see my sister's face, I don't know when it's on, whatever. She had a zit on her nose. That's the only text I got about the experience.
She had a zit
about measles. That's it. Oh, and yes, she was upset about it.
Always.
So.
When
there's
you're
no sibling rivalry going on there?
I was secretly pleased.
All right. Anything else? Well, then we're adjourned. Thank you.